What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside, for the first time ever on this show, friend of Kinda Funny, world-famous video game developer, Christian Phillips.
Yeah! I'm not sure on what world, but I'll take it.
The PlayStation world, of course. Folks know you, of course, from forever, right? Like, you did Beyond back in the day. Didn't you come in for interviews? And then we did PSX stuff here on Kinda Funny. You were the former head of Sony San Diego Studios.
Correct.
Now you've been out officially a year today, you told me.
Yeah, this whole thing coming together, amazing.
That's, of course, the Kinda Funny Games Daily train rolling through. They're excited you're on
love
the show.
Love it, yeah. Shout out from the train. Mad love. Yeah, no, it's. I woke up this morning and I realized, holy shit, it was exactly a year ago.
Yeah.
Today.
How's that feel? How long were you at PlayStation?
I was there 14 years.
Yeah, that's a long chunk of change.
Yeah, it was. An amazing time, too. So back to your question of how it feels, a little surreal.
Yeah.
To be honest, it feels like I've been gone forever, but at the same time, it feels like it was just yesterday.
Yeah.
Still in touch with, obviously, a lot of folks can't work there for 14 years and
just cut it all off.
Yeah. End it. But, it's been amazing. Actually, it's been a bananas year for me. So it's been great.
What have you been up to?
Embracing the indie life.
Yeah.
I've been in games 25 plus years now, but they were all with hardware manufacturers. So, while I got a lot of amazing opportunities along the way to learn development and be part of making games, until you're a true independent game developer, there's just a lot of shit you just really don't know.
You have to have that firsthand experience.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So it's
what's the biggest learning lesson you've had so far, you think?
That not all publishers give a shit.
Really?
Yeah. About their developers.
Okay.
It's amazing.
You want to name names? You want to lay people out right now?
No, not really. I'm not looking to put people on blast, but, those folks know who they are.
Yeah.
I think they would, I'm incredibly fortunate that I get to work around and with publishers that do care. And it's their caring that I think more highlights the lack of caring of others, right?
So it's not sure. You see somebody going above and beyond,
right? Yeah. So it's not just me complaining and whining. It's that I look at how some organizations treat the development community, and there I will name names, specifically Shu Yoshida, Scott Rohde. They're amazing individuals that really drive the discussion to be about what's best for the game and for the end. Players.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
So
a player's first attitude.
Yeah. Absolutely. Lots of slogans being used and thrown around, players first, but those two guys.
It's not even a slogan, though. Yeah. It's, I guess, for Microsoft. No, was it EA? Whoever did it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm not going to let them co-op a really good term. That was something that makes sense. And that's a great vision I think a lot of people do have in this industry. And what makes it so special is, I think, as the Roper, you talked about it being kismet that you're on the show.
Yeah.
Because, of course, we're friends. We go out to dinner. We hang out. I enjoy your company. And literally, you're coming in town. I didn't know until I ran into you last night at 11:30 at LAX on my flight. And you're like, oh, hey. And I got a free day tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, Gary Wood is not on the show. Can't do it. You need to come on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the news we have in the Roper Report.
Crazy.
All very much in your wheelhouse of what happened at Sony San Diego.
And I'm going to have to step out of character a bit and maybe actually formulate some opinions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Is that weird now that you can go off leash and you can just talk and nobody's going to stop?
So it's funny because I thought I was just going to go ham.
Yeah.
But then, I remember that I've been married for 24 years.
Yeah.
And my wife is way smarter than me.
Yeah.
I'm sure it comes as no surprise to anyone. And she's been keeping the lid on my crazy. So I'll go on rants.
Okay.
But she keeps reminding me that, I need to at least be civil.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Look, it'll be an interesting show. If you didn't know, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every week, on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about, giving you perspective, insight, answering your questions, reading bad PSN names, and having a good time. If you like that, you can watch it live as we record it on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. But we don't look at the chat. If you want to be a part of the show in any way, shape, or form, you need to write write in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. That's where we get the questions and all the segment ideas. Meanwhile, if you are one of the kids watching live, you have a job today. You need to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight at the end of the show for everybody listening later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping! There's a new party mode up on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. It is the return of Smash Brothers to our channel. We all play. Andy gets really mad. Then, if you go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you can kick us a dollar and get next week's episode early. It is Nidhogg. It is excellent. And even if you don't want to watch the content earlier, it would mean a lot to us to keep the lights on and the bills paid if you went to Patreon and tossed us a few dollars. Meanwhile, Andrea Renee has been nominated for the Game Awards Trending Gamer. Of course, she was on the show yesterday with Gary Whitta talking about it. Of course, she is too humble. Let's fucking win this thing for her. Everybody get out there and vote. TheGameAwards.com. I believe it's just like it was my year too, where you can use the hashtag. There's a button to use there. Go vote. Vote often. Let's go back and get this away from that Dr. Disrespect fella. This Stephen Spawn fella. Oh, I'm kidding. We love Steve. But you know what I mean? Like, she's family now. Oh, we got
to
get this for her.
Such a great thing to see too.
It's
I woke up to that this morning
yeah.
in my Twitter feed.
Right. Oh, yeah, because you're from China. You're all over the place.
Yeah. I'm stoked to see that.
I mean, it's a great class in general.
Yeah.
She's obviously amazing. Steven's amazing. Dr. Disrespect's doing a bunch of cool content on the...
Team Andrew.
It's a great thing. Yeah, but we got to.
Yep.
We give her a paycheck. We got to get out there. Right, Joey?
Yeah.
That's right.
Woo!
For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Four items on the Roper Report. You did great, Joey. You did great.
Feeling sick, not really on my game, but I'm working on it.
You nailed it. Don't worry. Just go home now. Good. Okay, good. All right. Number one. And this one breaks my heart. Disney has shut down Marvel Heroes. Of course, Marvel Heroes, the action MMORPG, whatever the hell you want to call it, from Gazillion. It was a deal that had happened before Disney bought Marvel. Disney buys Marvel. Marvel Heroes is ongoing, but apparently no more. The quote given to Kotaku was, and this is from a Marvel representative, quote, "We regret to inform our Marvel Heroes fans that we have ended our relationship with Gazillion Entertainment and that the Marvel Heroes games will be shut down. We would like to sincerely thank the players who joined the Marvel Heroes community and will provide any further updates as they become available." Marvel Heroes, of course, came out quite some time ago. It's basically Diablo with Marvel Heroes. I played a lot of it. I bought the Founders Pack on PC, which would have been 2014, 2015, kindoffunny.com/wrong. Even though I'm pretty sure it's 2014. David Brevik was on board at that time. He stayed on a while too, but he left recently. Of course, Anthony Gaius, former co-worker of mine at IGN, now over at Gazillion as well. No date on when it's shutting down. It sounds like it's pretty imminent, like it's going to be pretty gosh darn quick.
Yeah, well, I mean, this has been coming for some time. I think, as a fan, you look at it... Not to get all business end
no,
of it.
This is what we need. We
yeah,
need
but you know the reality is that, and this is obviously I don't know all the details, but as an indie dev,
yeah,
I'm gonna put this on Marvel.
Yeah,
this is on Marvel and this is on Disney. This is not on the Gazillion. Poor folks at Gazillion.
Yeah,
I guarantee there are a ton of incredibly talented folks there.
Of course,
but when you're publisher or your in this case the licensors as well, but like when you don't have a really clear way of building community and acquiring those users and a plan and an understanding of what it takes to run a live ops, that's probably been, you asked me earlier, one of the big learning lessons I've learned is I got a real wake-up call at, leaving Sony as to what it really means to have a live ops team running a game when it's a game as a service like this. So, I feel bad for them.
Oh my God, I feel terrible for them. But it's one of those tough. Like in the Kotaku article, I pulled this early on when it first broke. I was on the morning show today, so I don't know if they've announced a date since then. Kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong.
I looked right before I came on.
Still nothing.
See a date,
okay,
yeah.
Cool. It's expanded more with more context to it. And as a Marvel Heroes fan, as somebody who subscribes to the Marvel Heroes subreddit, I've seen something's wrong for a while,
because
it has been the community being like, hey, you do weekly updates and you haven't done them in 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And then the Gazillion put out a statement actually saying like, everything's all right, don't read into this. But then still there were no updates. They missed the Thor pack they were supposed to put out. So clearly something was happening on the other end.
Right.
I don't know if I expected it to come like this, because this makes it sound like the servers are off, and I don't know if that's true, and I doubt it is, but I don't know what they're getting into. But it's 100% on Disney. It's 100% on Marvel. And as always, I've been earning this reputation here, the corporate apologist. I think it sucks. I like Marvel Heroes. I loved chipping away at it on PlayStation 4. Jen is, when I put out my tweet today, mourning this, Jen said, oh, my leg, which is like one of the audio bites, you know, done over and over that she's had to listen to a million times. Disney and Marvel within their rights, you know what I mean? They bought this property, they bought this thing, and contracts were still out for it. And it seems like the scuttlebutt you've heard, some of the people who are getting unnamed sources, they've just never been a big fan, but they've kind of had to honor their agreement, and now the agreement's over. And it's similar to, I saw recently over the weekend that Deadpool was getting pulled from Steam, I think, this week, the Deadpool game, where it's, again, licensing is up. Like, you don't get to sell that in perpetuity forever if you're Activision. You have to, when the agreement's done, the game is done.
Yeah.
And so this sucks, and it's horrible, and I love Anthony. I love all the people I ever met at Gazillion. But it's like, fuck business. Like, you know what I mean?
It's business. That's really is. And I've spent a lot of my career working on properties that had heavy license presence. And it was always one of my biggest fears. I worked at Nintendo on the Kobe Bryant NBA court side. And we had, back then, I had the incredible honor of getting yelled at by David Stern for... not waiting for the approval on the title of the game because it was Kobe Bryant's with a possessive
tone
NBA courtside, and he loudly informed me that he didn't own the NBA, right? And it put I almost lost my job that day.
Really?
We'd already gone to print on packaging and a bunch of stuff. So we ended up that game. So when you look at it, the packaging is correct. We managed to fix that. But the in-game title screen still says, nope, it's Kobe's NBA.
That's funny as hell, man. That's crazy.
So when you do have licensors, it's
a weird thing to jump through.
Yeah. You've got to have a plan in case they pull it.
And that's the thing, I think, when we talk about this, it gets weird and dicey when you're talking about games as a service, right?
Right.
But Marvel Heroes, I don't think I've stressed, is free to play. You can get on there and do these microtransactions, get in that way, or, you know, play for free, all these different things. But when it's that kind of game where it's survival year after year, month after month, week after week, is the license, that's where it gets difficult. Because you hear devs all the time, or even fans, be like, oh, I love new IP. I want people to make new IP. And then when Insomniac puts out Sunset Overdrive and it doesn't move units that much, and then they do Spider-Man, some people are like, oh, why aren't they making an original IP? Well, it's like, well, they tried that and that didn't, you know, not that it didn't work, but it didn't do what it was supposed to. And this is a great opportunity for them. But one day that might not be a game that can get sold everywhere, let alone because it's published by Sony. And what's the agreement there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and launching new IP, to your point, everyone clamors for it, but then they're super reluctant to invest. They're apprehensive. Well, I want to wait and see what other people think, or I want to take my time. I'm not sure I want to jump into this game. So it's never going to make everyone happy.
Now,
just make a great game.
Sony San Diego.
Yeah.
Before you left there. Yep. You had a bit of experience there with free-to-play and new IP.
I did.
What you guys were doing, Guns Up was one of the ones that came out of there?
Yeah, so when it came to free-to-play, we went fully live with Guns Up at PSX one year. And then shortly after that, in September of last year, I guess this can be in the... Got it wrong. I should know this. August timeframe, we went live with Killstrain,
right?
Which was also free to play and also a new IP. So super challenging. Learned a lot. Obviously, Killstrain, unfortunately, didn't have the numbers and the performance that we wanted.
Yeah.
And that really came down to understanding user acquisition, understanding the development pipeline that's needed. It's very different than what you need for a packaged product.
Sure.
Very, very different. It's a longer-tailed, expensive risk. And, you know, to Sony's credit, they gave us, you know, 2+ years to try and get that sorted and figured out. And... as with all games, not every game hits, right?
Sure, so, of course.
Yeah.
Did you feel When I talk to you, and when we would talk to you on, you know, any of the PlayStation-centric shows I've ever done, I forget where it falls in the timeline, it would be the whole thing of, like, it was cool that they were giving you guys these keys to test drive these initiatives.
Yep.
Figure out how free-to-play works on consoles, figure out how it works on PlayStation, all these different things.
Right.
In the end, do you feel that was fair? Like, because there were layoffs, right, for some reason. Like, it wasn't like you left, but I mean, like, it wasn't like... It was just, I'm moving on. Like, there was a whole bunch of stuff and change and turnover and different vision, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, right, business.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they gave us, I think, a lot of room to work and explore and try and see if we couldn't crack the code.
Yeah.
On bringing free-to-play as a viable business model to first-party games, because others are doing it on console. Mm. We certainly weren't that pioneering, but at the end of the day, you got a business to run, and it wasn't working. And you know, they're always reevaluating. Like they say, you know, it sounds cheesy, but they are always reevaluating the portfolio and taking a look. And we had layoffs for that team. I was part of that whole decision that got made, and realized that it was time too for me to not look for more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Get out there and do something.
Yeah, exactly. But when it came to Sony and free to play, they were They were really strong partners to us at the studio.
Yeah,
and very supportive. It's just, it's a slog.
Sure,
it's tough. Which is why, you know, not everybody is succeeding, even like in PC.
Oh yeah,
right. Where obviously this business model has been around far longer.
Sure. Yeah, and that's just the. Again, the business side of the industry, right? It's like, I can't, because correct me if I'm wrong. Again, because I'm always just the outsider commentating on what I see, right?
Yeah.
We've had a round of layoffs recently, right? It seems like with Telltale, we're restructuring, we're figuring out, we're going to fix our engine. Visceral getting closed, right?
Right.
I feel, and maybe Visceral's not the best example based on some of the scuttlebutt around there and the Jason Schreier's article saying that it was off track and these were the problems. But I feel like sometimes Telltale's a good example, right? That it's not hard feelings. It's not that you made a bad game.
Right.
It's just that it didn't hit, and we wanted to try it, and we need to reorganize, restructure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was very much the case here.
Yeah.
I think that you know, Sony realized that there was a need to take a hard look at what they were doing with that particular project. Guns is still rolling. They pushed it to Steam, and it's available there. I've been playing a shitload of it on Steam.
Yeah,
love it. The game has just evolved so well, and a lot of the challenges that we were trying to figure out for onboarding people and getting them into the game and walking them through a tutorial without it feeling like mandated and oppressed.
Now hit X.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then making them feel like there was real value there for the content that they were pushing, you know, that Sony pushes out there for purchase, that it's valuable, right? And that it's worth what you're being asked to pay, you know, is also very much in the news right now. So.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we'll get to that here in a second. Don't worry. I want to kick it over to Mark English, though, who wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, Greg, as a proponent of games as services and as a fan of the game Marvel Heroes, how do you feel with Disney having shut down the game today, according to Kotaku? Do you feel you wasted your time or money in a game that was out for less than a year and will soon be unplayable? Or do you think it was worth it for all the fun you had? Going forward, do you think that more of these higher profile games as services will have shorter half-life due to the competition they face from other like games? Thanks, Greg. And Tim, he says, but we'll toss you in the Christian for helping through the day. Loaded question, so let's break it down a little bit, right? He's specifically talking about Marvel Heroes Omega on the console, where he's saying, do you feel like you wasted your time or money? Worth pointing out that my time is my time, of course. Money, though, yeah, I had gotten, when they sent me review codes, I unlocked all the packs through codes they had sent me, and, like, I always talk about the Spider-Gwen story where I rolled a bunch for her. Since then, I have invested money, but not nearly as much as if I would have bought all that stuff. More importantly, though, Marvel Heroes overall, again, when David Brevik came by the first time for his first Up at Noon and showed me that game and talked about that game, and maybe it was just a demo, but I digress. I went and bought the Founders Pack for $150 and played on PC and bought more stuff there with real money.
Yeah.
How do I feel about all this as a fan? It breaks my heart. Marvel Heroes Omega is a game that I still like. On my, I put everything in folders now, and I keep at the front games I'm going to play, right, or that I'm playing in the moment. And Marvel Heroes is always in that top five or seven because it's always there are days where I'll be hungover. I'm like, you know what? I want to play a game, but I can't. Like, I'm not gonna enjoy a story. So let's just go through as Lady Thor and beat the hell out of everything as Jane Foster. That breaks my heart that that experience won't be there. I do not feel betrayed by this. I think that, like most of us, this I got my ticket punched. I knew what I was getting into. A better example for me personally is DC Universe Online, where I, you know how much I've always loved that game. I still keep my $150 annual subscription to DC Universe Online, even though I can't remember the last time I put real time into DC Universe Online. But I love my Taylor Swift character, and I want all that stuff in my vault, and I do want the ability to go back there. And because I love that game, I want to support it, and I want to give them money. And the money I've sunk into that thing through the Let's Get a Better Aura or stupid boxes like that, not like I'm dropping thousands on it, but like my subscription is $150. One day that's going to go away.
Yeah.
And that one will be, I mean, like, this sucks because, oh, man, I know Gazillion. I love the game, blah, blah, blah. DC's been such a huge part of my modern gaming life that when that, and it's my fucking heaven, as I always talk about, when that inevitably closes, that's going to be devastating for me. But again, I knew what I was getting into. I knew how all this worked. I feel like the time thing, I don't think counts because.
Right.
Every game ends.
Yeah.
You put 500 hours into Skyrim, you walk away eventually. It's not like you're going to do it nonstop.
Right. Yeah. A new game comes out.
Takes
that spot in the folder.
In the money I've spent on Marvel Heroes or on DC Universe Online or whatever games as a service now with Friday the 13th when I'm buying counselor packs or whatever, Halloween costumes, I don't see it as something that now I'm owed another 8 months of the game or a year of the game. I see it as like they're doing something I love and I want them to be around as long as possible. So I put that in there. Again, for Marvel Heroes Omega, different conversation than some people had. There are, I saw on the subreddit today, people were like, well, I wish I would have known this, and I wouldn't have bought the Guardians of the Galaxy pack last week. I get that, but...
I don't get that, right? Because the content's there. It's not like... I could see if maybe that same person said, I wish I hadn't pre-ordered it, but they have the content.
They got it and started
playing it.
Yeah.
Like... To the point that we've been making, we don't know if or when, you know,
Game X is gonna shut down.
This game is going to be closed down in particular. But it's like you have the content and you're enjoying it. And that content didn't just magically make itself.
Yeah.
Right. So how can you begrudge purchasing something that even if it's like 20 hours of play that you're going to get out of it, was that really not worth it?
Yeah. See, here's the thing. I think that the problem is here's the money symbol obviously is the point of purchase. I drew a dumb diagram here, right? When I'm saying as a general consumer buy it, I'm putting the money down with the expectation of what I'm going to do with it. When I think a developer, someone who worked on this says, here's the price tag. Mm-hmm. They're saying, here's how much it took to make it.
Sure.
And I feel like that's just, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like, so fuck
it. I guess, so going back to your chart, I guess what.
My very high class chart.
This, you know, on this end. Is,
yeah, the consumer end.
Like when is this line going to be long enough? And I feel like it never is.
It'll never be long enough. So, no, there's never going to be a way to be long enough.
So that person could have bought a pack, and the example could have bought a pack, and in 3 years, they would probably still be complaining that the game was going to be shut
down. You know how we all do it too, right? Where it's like, okay, cool. Like the person on the subreddit I saw bought Guardians last week. Maybe they didn't start it. You know what I mean? It was the thing. Oh, I bought it and it's on the pile of shame. I'll get to it when I get to it. I saw it on, it was on sale or why they decided to buy Guardians last week. I get it to an extent of like that, but there's also, again, be an informed consumer. And I'm not saying this is on it, but like, hey, updates. Like, there's scuttlebutt in the community that something's not correct here. And you're already on the subreddit. You saw people talking about there being a problem.
Right.
There's something to that. Not to mention the fact that you're not owed anything. We all agree to that when we buy it. We know what we're doing. Just buy boxed, physical, finished games that are single player only if you want to be there eventually. But no matter what you buy, the Destiny 2 servers will be closed one day.
Yeah.
The Call of Duty servers will close one day.
If they bought that pack and then they had a shit experience,
yeah,
then I understand the complaint. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, did the announcement degrade your fun with the content you just acquired? Or are you having fun, and are you more lamenting that you're not going to have as long with it?
Yeah.
That I can understand. Lamenting that you're not going to get to spend more time with it versus being pissed.
Sure.
I guess that maybe that's the subtle distinction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, IGN is talking about how long it's going to take you to unlock everything in Battlefront 2 if you want to play for free. I'm jumping into their article. Dedicated number cruncher Soren Camper over at Star Wars Gaming created a formula estimating the percentage chance of card drops, the credits given for duplicate cards, and the average number of crafting parts given per box. Using Camper's formula, it emerges that players are looking at over 6 months of playtime, 4,528 hours to be precise. If you don't have the time or inclination to devote 6 months of your life to the game, Camper estimates that paying for the estimated 3,111 crates this would take would cost you $2,100 or your local equivalent in the game's crystals currency. Camper's maths, oh, you can tell this isn't written by an American, are fairly generous, ignoring the time it takes to level up the game's star cards to level 3 and the time to unlock heroes. If you're interested, we recommend taking a look at the original post. It's eye-opening stuff. What you've been, you know, you leave Sony San Diego, you're out right there in the indie world now, and in this year gap, and mainly the last 6 months, holy fucking shit, microtransactions, loot crates, all this stuff's happening, and it's, you were working, Sony San Diego, right?
Yep.
MLB The Show. That's the game you guys are known for.
Yeah.
But you got to be there, obviously, spearheading that, and then also bringing up this free-to-play movement that has microtransactions in it, obviously keeping right it all going.
Yeah.
What has your take been on microtransactions in infiltrating AAA gaming and dot, 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 dot?
Well, I have a lot of opinions.
I'd expect no
shocking,
less, Christian.
Right? Yeah. I have a lot of opinions and a lot of thoughts for sure. Let's step back though to even talking about MLB The Show.
Sure.
You know, when I arrived in San Diego, that team there was cranking out the greatest baseball game that wasn't getting, I felt, the attention and the love
still
that it deserves. I would agree, considering that this is going to be year 15 in a row nominated for an AIAS Sports Game of the Year, and it's never going to win. It's the Susan Lucci of sports games.
Yeah.
Always going to be nominated, but, you know, I think the subject matter is what limits it there. But
100%. Like, yeah. This is what sucks about sports games and when they make changes, but especially The Show, is the fact that, cool, you got the pie chart of people who play video games.
Right.
Then we got PlayStation people.
Yep.
Then we got people who actually care about sports. Then you have people who care about baseball.
Yeah.
So it's like, somebody who like appreciates baseball, loves video games, I look at The Show, I've done demos of The Show, I'm like, man, this looks awesome. But I don't know why. I can't sit there and tell you how it's more like Ryan McCaffrey.
Right.
We'll talk your fucking ear off and explain the differences between this and how this is so realistic. But as a non-baseball fan, I can't see that in the giant, you know, mosaic that's been made.
Right.
I know it's great, but how great?
Yeah. And so, you know, here's a premium product that you pay an upfront, you know, let's just call it $60. Mm-hmm. Although with bundles now, right, just like any other franchise, you can end up investing far more because we introduced monetization into The Show very early.
Sure.
I want to say, and I guess I could get corrected on this one too, I want to say MLB 12
okay
was when we really started seeing stubs be accepted by the community. And so I think that a lot of it comes down to how it's done. Is it done organically and as a way to really enhance versus restrict your gameplay experience, which sure is what I would say The Show does very, very well. And you fast forward to now, and, you know, without saying actual numbers, I mean, we saw there at Sony San Diego, we saw that revenue grow to the point where it was offsetting the development costs, which is really critical for a developer because that's what gives you long-term stability in a relationship, right?
Yeah.
Talking about being beholden to a licensor, I mean, The Show is a great game, but the second you take away the license, is it still as great a game? I would argue yes from a gameplay perspective, but people's interests, you know, can can dive.
And if so, you lost the license to the MLB and it was like, all right, and here's the Chicago Grizzlies playing like,
Bubblegum
Field. Like, exactly. Nobody wants that crap.
Right. And so at the end of the day, you've got to be able to safeguard your future as much as possible.
Yeah.
And we were able to do that with the show, for sure. And it's great to watch how that just continues to grow and evolve. I think that, you know, you see examples of then with Madden and FIFA Ultimate Team.
Yep.
And then that basically being able to spin off and be its own standalone mobile product, and the amount of revenue that they can generate, I think cause them to think, oh, we can apply the same formula in every other genre.
Yep.
And they didn't, I don't know that they really took the time to think through the value. You know, in articles today, I read something this morning on my Twitter feed that, I think out of Kotaku, where they were saying, well, that's great that they dropped the price of, you know,
Vader and the others,
but they also dropped, you know, at the end of the mission, they dropped the value that was in the loot box down to 5K.
Yeah.
Right. And they had a good explanation when you think of it on paper. Well, it was always intended to be just enough to be able to unlock. I can't remember which character it is. Somebody will tell us for sure. But
it's a carrot at the end of the stick.
Right. And that to me showed where the real breakdown was, because they only thought to reward just enough to create a purchase in the hopes that they would probably make the person comfortable with that loop, thinking then they'll spend more money.
Yeah.
Not realizing that maybe it was going to backfire on them.
Clearly,
you know,
not.
Obviously.
Battlefront, man. Every turn on this game, they just seem to be taking it on the chin. Where it was like, I mean, like, I
started off trying to defend them
when
a lot of this started,
right,
especially internally, with folks I'm working with now. And then it just became harder and harder.
Yeah.
And by the end, I was, you know, shouting and looking for my pitchfork too.
Right. So. Well, it's just like, I can't. This was such a slam dunk, and it even sounds like it when they were like, "Cool, Battlefront 2. Here's the single player campaign you want, John Boyega. When I'm playing with my Greg, I hate Star Wars character. It's hard to turn it off sometimes. Boyega, here you go. And then it was like, cool. You guys didn't like the season pass. No season pass this time. But we'll put these microtransactions, and everybody's like, and then it was like that beta came, and then this news, and it's just like, for me personally, I'm like, just get the fucking game out, and then in 2 weeks, let's see where we are.
Right.
Let's see what, because I do feel like, talk about it, you know, developers, like, the people on the other side, DICE, I do feel like had good intentions with what they were doing and where they were going, and now the sea is so muddled that they're just like, like, what do we do? How do we fix this? How do you get there?
Oh, there have to be monetization and design folks internally at DICE that are just shaking their fist at corporate, saying, "We told you." You know, they say, "Oh, you know, our time in beta showed us that this is what, you know, where the community fell." And especially, at least from what I have seen, those periods aren't long enough, and the tests aren't long enough, right?
Sure.
They marketing drives those decisions.
They
a
operate
lot.
Like a demo a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Stoke
exactly.
the flames a couple weeks, and then
exactly.
hey, the game's coming up. Pre-order right
and
now.
And that was one of the things that we worked hard to try and change when I was at Sony San Diego, was understanding what is the real purpose of a beta.
Yeah,
and so I don't know how this is going to look long term for EA too. You know, with they have all these great games where there's been just such a cool reception, or sometimes angry reception. Mm-hmm. Need for Speed, Mass Effect, now this. Like, this has been a rough year.
Closing Visceral.
Yeah,
like, I mean, like, yeah,
this is a rough year for
100%.
Yeah, Patrick Soderlund.
Yeah.
Putting his stamp.
Got some stuff to worry about next year for sure. But again, it's just EA, you know, worst company in the year those last two, or not last 2 years, but the 2 years in a row they got it, 14 and 15. It was that thing of like, man, but like, what about Comcast? Like, we're all like, oh, there's all these things.
Absolutely.
But then like and then it was the Peter Moore Gamers First were doing all this, like, Yarny, and it was like, all right, cool. They're trying to turn it around. They're trying to get the public behind them. And then this year it's totally been like, let's fuck up all the goodwill we have. Any goodwill we
have. And interestingly, Peter is not there. He's
exactly.
He's running now Liverpool.
Oh, yeah. I know. The football club.
You never walk alone, Peter.
Yeah.
Never walk alone.
So here's my question for you.
Yeah.
You talked earlier about bringing microtransactions to the show and doing that. and how it offsets development cost.
Yep.
Where, when that idea comes and you start doing it, how do you find the footing? And I feel like when this gets talked about, right, and when, because it's, this has been a rough year for microtransactions in general, because it is moving from a free-to-play space to the AAA space, and this is happening that time, blah, 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 blah. And it seems to get painted with this broad brush, if you're the super negative side, of like, it's just fucking corporations and developers being greedy.
Right.
Why did you put him in, why did Sony San Diego at the time put him in the show?
So, for us, I guess it's going to be pretty easy for people to just go, oh, he means being greedy. But it was, for me personally, when I really wanted to push for that introduction of microtransaction in the game, there was a lot of resistance throughout the organization because they were thinking on behalf of fans.
Sure.
What motivated me in terms of pushing that conversation forward and making folks have to consider it and then ultimately us come up with a plan was just about the survival of that franchise. You know, when you have a licensor, the attitude is really you pay handsomely for the privilege of making their game for them.
Okay.
And here's your check, sir.
Sure.
Right? So that check keeps getting bigger, right? There's no assumption of risk by a licensor. So as you have renewals, and that maybe could have been part of it too, you know, with Gazillion. And,
Gazillion.
Right? Where they get to a point where they can just be priced out. Mm. They can just be like, well, this is the minimum guarantee. This is what we can get from others. There are others interested in the license. Can you step up? And so when I got to Sony San Diego, I got there when it was still 989 Sports. And I went down there to join the studio head for Sony San Diego, a guy you might know, Scott Rohde.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
He was the one that lured me down there with candy and the promise of bringing 989 Sports back to its glory of PS1 days. And I was stoked about that idea. And I was there maybe a week when I was told that my top priority was to figure out why the NFL was being weird. And fast forward to December of 2004, because that was summer of 2004. And fast forward to December of 2004 and the announcement of EA locking up.
Yeah, Madden.
Yeah, and so when that happened, it had a cascading effect within the studio there for us in terms of just how we looked at sports and their place in the portfolio. And our basketball franchise was a solid game, but it wasn't making any headway against EA and 2K, understandably, I guess, on some level, because those games really are great. Our hockey franchise wasn't killing it either, and then hockey itself as a business couldn't figure it out at that time between the strike and everything else. So it just became clear that we needed to make sure that we had a revenue source for the franchise that would ensure that we could stay in the mix and that we could cover the guarantees. Because to your point from earlier, like baseball as a total available market tends to be around the 3 to 3.5 million unit. When you're talking about packaged goods.
Sure.
And it's been that way since I worked on the Griffey games on Super Nintendo. Like, very rarely would you see the total. Well, and that's like the total market. I'm not even talking about for one franchise.
Okay.
People were splitting a pie of 3 million.
Gotcha.
Right? So that's why EA probably never really considered seriously locking up MLB on an exclusive basis.
Sure. Who cares?
They didn't feel like it was valuable
potatoes.
Enough.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was really what motivated me.
Gotcha.
And I think that, you know, for the rest of the company, obviously, when we could show them that there was a path to generating more money that fans embraced, then they got fully behind it.
To bring it up, like, what are the microtransactions in the show that we're talking about?
Yeah, so when we started off initially, it was super easy. We were doing like a challenge of the week, and you could play the challenge of the week for free. But then if you wanted to retry it, you could buy stubs for retries because it was basically a leaderboard type of experience. And so we started off with subtle ways like that where it didn't really matter didn't have any impact on your franchise or your road to the show or season.
Sure, the premier was, content that you're buying the
game was,
for.
It was just a challenge of the week where you could get, you know, recognition from the community and things like that. Fast forward to now, and there's one single currency. It's Stubbs. It's used everywhere in the game. You can use it for buying card packs. You can use it still in the challenges and things like that. And so, you know, and I can't speak to what's coming next. I've been out now long enough that I have no idea what the show is going to be bringing. So I'm a little giddy. I bought the Griffey bundle last year because I'm such a fan of him and obviously the show. Told them they didn't have to send me a comp one. They offered for the record. They were cool. But, you know, I want to see where they take it. I think that their Diamond Dynasty mode is amazing. And the fact that they have a marketplace in there that allows people to be able to generate their own in-game revenue by getting rid of either dupes or highly sought after cards, I think makes it an ecosystem where that community is like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. We don't feel like they held anything back. It's the same anger that used to be there for DLC, now on steroids, right? Where they were like, fuck you,
You can say fuck yeah.
Okay,
no,
cool.
Totally.
They were just like, you know, fuck off. We spent $65 and then day one there's, you know,
more
three
stuff
maps
on the disc.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
I'm just downloading a 100 kilobyte thing that unlocks something and fuck you. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I think that we were initially worried that people would have that reaction with the show. And when we saw that wasn't the case and that there is because we were being very thoughtful about that integration, that's why it ended up working.
Gotcha. Where do you fall now then? You see so many AAA games doing this. Do you see it as licensing could be an interesting thing? Let's try to make more money off this game because we're getting raked over the coals here. But do you buy into the argument you'll see people make? And I know Jim Sterling just put up a video like saying this is a myth, but the idea that games are more expensive than ever to make, so we need to figure out a new revenue model to support that structure?
Games definitely are more expensive to make. So I haven't seen Jim's video, but I would love to know his math of how he thinks that's a myth.
Sure. I'm sorry. He's just, the myth isn't that the games are more expensive to make. I think it's that's why microtransactions are getting into games.
To
every game.
Yeah. I think that just empirically that has to be true, right? Mm. Because games are significantly more, they're exponentially more expensive to make than they were 10 years ago. So I think that that's absolutely one of the key drivers for folks is just trying to understand, okay, well, we don't make this entertainment as a charity. We do it as a business.
Sure.
And I know that sounds dickish and... But it is what it is.
Does it? I feel like this is the problem I have.
The
on this
looks
show.
I get from fans when I, you know, like people in my private life, right? When they come to me, because I surround myself with gaming nerds in my personal life as well, because I really do love fucking games.
Yeah.
So, you know, to get into conversations, debates where they're like, you know, fuck you guys are just trying to, you know, squeeze blood from a stone. It's like, well, no. We're trying to realistically look at, okay, how do we offset the development costs?
Yeah.
You know, there's no equivalent in the movie industry or the music industry, right? It's literally just sell more copies.
Yeah.
But for a closed system like a PlayStation or an Xbox, you have a finite reach. So now you really do need to figure out how to maximize in that finite reach. Companies like EA have a bit of a heads up they're a bit of an advantage. Struggling this morning, sorry.
No.
That I'm still on China time.
I was going to say, you just flew in from China. I don't think you have to, don't worry about it.
So they have a bit of an advantage and leg up is what I was going for, where they're across all consoles and potentially PC. And so that does help amortize out those licensing costs and those development costs, and that does help. But for a title like the show, they have a finite, you know, audience and an even more finite fan base.
Sure.
And so you've got to figure out how to grow. And that's tough.
The thing that makes me like about this whole argument is when people just want to throw microtransactions in general are bad, or in me saying that, then throw it back in my face that I'm a corporate apologist. Yeah. And what I keep talking about is this balance between art and business, and that's what games are, and we haven't figured out a way to make them just art where you can get a government grant and make whatever the hell you want, and right. nobody's looking for a profit. And yep. like it is that business. And so this year has seemed egregious with these microtransactions, because there are people like the Battlefront things that have started doing it wrong.
Right.
Now trying to correct it, but have they really corrected it? Nobody will know until this game's out in the wild. It just, microtransactions have been around a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And most of the times we haven't really paid much attention to it because they've been done fine and you feel like it's fair. But like 2017 is definitely the year of, wait, something's fucked up. You know right. what I mean? Like, wait a second. Like, loot boxes in Overwatch last year, nobody was like up in arms about it because they did it really well. Mm-hmm. They did it all in an excellent way that it felt rewarding. And you didn't feel like you were getting screwed, and it was cosmetics. But then it was like this year of Destiny and shaders, and this year now. And Battlefront's obviously the one that's like the most fucked up right now.
Yeah.
And like on everybody, the tip of everybody's tongue. So it's like we need to weather the storm, but also I don't want people leaving the storm thinking that every microtransaction is bad.
Right.
That's not true. There's a way to do this that benefits developers and publishers and encourages them to make more games, and consumers leave there going like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I got the costume I wanted, or the buff I wanted, or whatever the hell.
Absolutely. Yep.
We got to get there. Number three, GameStop has temporarily paused its rental service. If you remember, this is via IGN, by the way. If you remember, we talked about it last week and then a few weeks ago in the beta program they were talking about, but they were going to do this 6 months of unlimited rentals for $60, one in, one out at a time. So you go in there, you get a game, leave, play it, come back, bring it back, get another game. GameStop gave IGN the following statement. We have elected to temporarily pause the rollout of the new PowerPass subscription service based on a few program limitations we have identified. We feel this is the right thing to do for now to ensure we are able to provide our guests an exceptional service. Not much to say. I think it's a cool program.
Yeah. And you know what? Mad love to GameStop for just like being straight up and dropping, you know,
yeah.
a door on it and being like, nope. We're going to hit stop. It's not doing, because who knows what those issues were.
I'd love, and that's the thing. Yeah.
I'm envisioning. I wouldn't want to take my kid to GameStop
every week.
Yeah. Well, you're assuming right?
Every day.
I mean, yeah. Or yeah. Think about summertime, right?
Yeah. Well, see, like that's what I loved about it for me because I think it was going to happen November 21st was what the store flyer that leaked on Reset Era said. What I loved about it is a callback to me, to my childhood, junior high years of like when Blockbuster did
sure.
it. And I'd ride my bike to Blockbuster, get the game, ride home, play it for a night, two nights, whatever, bring it back and do it all over again.
Yeah.
And I really liked the idea of, again, in a time where gaming is so online centric and fractured in a way and, you know, really fucking mean a lot of times on the internet. I love the idea of, hey, good on GameStop, but let's bring people in the stores, and granted, they're bringing you in the store, so you see that Funko Pop, and you see that thing, and you get the Power Pass, and you do that. They're trying to make money, because it's business, but also, people coming in and actually being in person, talking about games, and having a conversation again. I loved that as a kid. I'd love to see that happen, but I am, what did you identify? Like, this thing's like a simple program. What did we miss here that you didn't know about?
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, maybe is where it misses with me is because the only time I used to go into a GameStop was I wanted to check to see what the presents for the show look like.
Oh, yeah.
And that was pretty much my only reason. And the only time I would talk, you know, with staff was go in and just ask questions to get a sense for how they talked about the game. You know, full disclosure, I'd tell them who I was so that it wasn't me baiting them into conversations. But I'd try and talk them up a bit about the show to see if they would, you know, if they were able to speak to why it was the game that it should buy or what would they recommend and things like that. And that exchange wasn't akin to what I remember as a kid going to the video store.
Oh, really?
Where you could go and just, I like these kind of movies and this, that, and you could talk to the person and then they would push you to hidden gems.
Sure.
Right. Or, you know, classics and things like that. I don't know that really happens in this space.
Really? That sucks.
I don't know. Does it? I mean, I'm asking.
I
also don't use Red Envelope at the grocery store for movies. Right. So I just, it's not something that factors into my life.
For me, it was
not a judgment statement. It's just
no.
It's just not part of my life.
I haven't been actively going to GameStop in a long time.
Yeah,
because I do everything digital, or right. I get stuff early, and I'm very blessed and lucky. But recently, I went and traded in a whole bunch of stuff so I could get my PlayStation 4 Pro and upgrade to that and do all this different stuff. And so I came in with like all my old 360 and my old PS3 and all these like old ass games. And it was that I sat there and just shot the shit with the manager as a co-manager, whoever. It must have been an hour. And awesome. It was totally this thing of like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And the guy came in, he's like, I just beat Evil Within last night.
Like,
what did you think? And blah, blah, blah. And like other people were coming
that's
in and then talking about it. And it was like, I forget that this can be cool. Now, granted, I was talking about the fact of like when I was in college, there was a complete asshole manager at a EB at the time. Or no, it was GameStop. GameStop in the Columbia Mall. And I was like, walked out and was away for years until randomly at a bar I ran into somebody. He's like, I work at GameStop. I'm like, oh, fuck that guy. And he's like, he left a long time ago. Come back. We're nice now. I was like, all right, great. Nice. So like, you have it. And then number four. Destiny 2 has announced a run of live streams for Curse of Osiris content. This is via Reset Era. While we were getting ready to go live for Kinda Funny Morning Show, they started one at 11. This one focused on the story's character and lore, new places players will go on Mercury, as well as the characters like Osiris and his ghost, Sagria. I'll say that. Stream 2 is going to focus on new activities players can engage in Curse of Osiris. This will be on Tuesday, the 21st of November at 11 a.m. Pacific. And then Stream 3 will focus on the new gear players will earn throughout Curse of Osiris and show off a new Crucible map. That's going to be Wednesday, the 29th of November, 11 a.m. Pacific. Getting ready for that December release date. You care?
I'll be honest, not so much on Destiny.
Sure.
Yeah. I played... the first Destiny when it came out for a bit. Shooters aren't my forte.
Totally.
I'm a bit of a Jim Halpert jumping in the corner.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. I got to jump back into Destiny 2 at Extra Life at Irrational Passions over the weekend. And fuck, do I love that game.
Yeah.
God, I came back, we had the early flight to LA yesterday, but I played at like midnight on Monday night of like getting out my vault, my keys from the fucking the thing, trying to beat the raid again, trying to Nightfall Prestige. It's like, I love this fucking thing.
That's awesome.
I'm excited for more content.
No, I think it's great. And I think that these streams are awesome way to introduce this content because, again, they're servicing a community.
Yep,
right?
Exactly.
So then when all this content is available for purchase in-game and you have to grind to get it, you're going to be fine with it because... you've already been familiarized, I think.
It's that, we had a person write in, I believe, on Monday show for Kind of Funny Games Daily with Tim, talking about why is the conversation so negative? And he actually brought up Destiny 2 in the way that, like, when you go to the Destiny 2 subreddit, super people are mad. When I tweeted about, hey, man, I just played Destiny again I love it. And the kid's like, I hope you mean Destiny 1, not Destiny 2, because Destiny 2 didn't blah, blah, blah. And that's all true, sure. And as I've always said, I think the vocal minority makes themselves seem like a majority when they get out there and say stuff. But I still, as somebody who plays Destiny, and maybe I'm just playing Destiny the way Bungie envisioned people playing Destiny of like, oh, I'm in there, I'm playing it, I've done this thing, cool. I'm still not 305. Like, I'm 297 now. Like, I'm fucking around with it and I'm having fun, but I'm not like... reading, but I go to Destiny or I go to Bungie.net, right? And I see these updates they put up where they're totally going into detail and shit I don't even care about,
right?
Even if you don't like what they're saying stuff, which is pretty cool. It's awesome that we live in a time where developers are out there being like, all right, cool, let me tell you everything that's happening and why this is what the decision is, blah, blah, blah.
A PC developer, Dauntless, behind Dauntless, just did that too with their development practice, their monetization scheme, because it's a free to play,
sure,
kind of Monster Hunter.
Monster
Hunter game. That transparency, I think, is...
It's key, man.
Yeah, well, and I think people now expect it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you can get away with not
doing it. It's 2017, right? Like, you expect that from everybody, which is why it's been interesting, with how we work, obviously. We deal in authenticity. This week, everything IGN doing with the sexual harassment stuff, putting up these, here's one from the content team, here's one for management, here's an update for management. Like, you have to do that now. You can't sit there and act like you're not people, because that was always what... That doesn't work out for... That you become EA at that point.
Right.
You're going to be there and be like, that's what we're going to be, and we see how that ends.
Yeah.
I digress.
Yes.
Christian.
Sir?
I'm stoked for this Destiny content, but if I wanted to know where to go for the next games, the cool games that are out in the mom and grop digital shops right now, where would I go?
The official list Is this it?
Yeah, that's right. You're doing it. You're killing it. Crushing it.
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah.
I missed my cue.
No, you did great. You did great. No, I always mean, what I need to do is print out a thing of like, and laminate it. Just be like, congratulations on being the guest host today. Here's your responsibilities. And it's just that. That's all there is. It's just that one. Out today, apparently, according to that video game release site Andrew always sends me to, Final Fantasy 15 multiplayer expansion Comrades is coming to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. It wasn't on Kotaku's list. So I digress on where that is. I don't know. New dates for you, though. Fighting EX Layer is coming to PlayStation 4, and the beta begins December 11th. And then this is a deal of the day slash new date. Starting November 16th at 5 a.m. Pacific time and running through November 20th at 5 a.m. Pacific time, Rainbow Six Siege will be free to play for PlayStation Plus subscribers. Additionally, the full editions of the game will be on sale for up to 60% off from November 16th through the 27th. And if you purchase Rainbow Six Siege, your progress from the free weekend will carry over.
That's huge.
That's all from PlayStation Blog. Rainbow Six, For Honor, somebody else I'm forgetting. Oh, Lawbreakers. They've been awesome about that of like, hey, here's a free weekend. Like, come see what people are talking about. Come get in here. And again, games as a service.
Right.
You're trying to keep a community. How do you grow it? How do you do that? These weekends are really a great idea for it, let alone keeping your stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
You've been a fascinating guest host.
I think
we've had such great conversations. I want to get one good question here from kindoffunny.com/KFGD for reader mail. Go from there. They got another honk. We started with a train horn, ran with a car horn. Maybe we got around this. Maybe let's just go with KCG's question, all right? Okay. Why are games becoming so expensive to make? Is because of the demand we, as gamers, put on developers because we cannot wait an extra year for the next Uncharted? I know they said the series is finished. Or Assassin's Creed? Is it more expensive to pay a smaller team for longer than a larger team for a shorter amount of time? Or is it simply the technology that's increasing in cost? Please help me understand if you can. KCG. Christian, another one. We kind of talked about this with like games are more expensive to make than ever.
Sure.
But why? Is it just the technology?
Well, I think it's definitely the tech. It's the amount of tech, and you know there are amazing and talented developers out there that just keep pushing the envelope.
Yeah,
right. We look at what the Uncharted franchise did for Sony.
Yeah,
first party. I mean, I think that it really was the first. Like next gen, maybe if you will, like a title that cemented, hey, first party Sony's serious, right? And then what they did with the introduction of Last of Us, introducing a whole new IP.
Yeah,
I mean, the amount of time that it takes in through prototype to be able to prove it out, because you know people are always like, well, show me something new. I want a new game mechanic.
I want that new hotness.
And exactly, there's got to be some sort of fire that bringing.
Great example is Lost Legacy, right? Where we liked Lost Legacy a lot. We've talked about it on this show. We enjoy it. We think it's a great game. It's just more Uncharted 4. Which Uncharted 4 last year, I think we gave Game of the Year, but Uncharted 4 this year, we're like, it's just more Uncharted 4.
Exactly. Yeah. And so people are constantly looking for that new game mechanic. Well, that new game mechanic takes time.
Yeah.
And it's easy to have the idea and the concept, but then proving out that concept a lot of times is impossible. I mean, I'll just plug a little bit Star Blood Arena for PlayStation VR. When, you know, I signed that when I was at Sony, and where they hooked me was when they said Descent in VR.
Mm.
And I went, yes, but holy shit, that's going to make me sick.
Yeah.
So we need to spend some time
getting it right,
proving out that this game can be played in the way we want it played without making everyone uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And White Moon Dreams nailed it. They delivered, but we had a nice prototype period where that was the only thing we were trying to solve.
Gotcha.
And making sure that we got that part right. And then once we knew that was right, then we made the rest of the game.
Mm.
Right. So it development periods and cycles are taking longer depending on how aggressive you are with regards to innovation. It's all going to cost money and time, and it takes more people now, and you know, the industry itself is growing up, right?
It's
everyone in the industry is now, I mean, there are a lot of folks that have been in 20 plus years. Well, they all have homes, mortgages,
kids
going to college now.
Yeah.
I got to start saving for college I should have a long time ago, but like at a mad pace now because I've got a kid who is a senior this year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you definitely have to start saving. Yeah,
right? Bad time to go indie, maybe?
Yeah.
Just put them to work. Yeah. But, all these things start to add up and the marketing costs alone, too, right? Because there's so many products.
Right.
Right. It used to be that. I know there are probably people still that feel that there are huge, periods of time where nothing's coming out. That's not true. Games are coming out all the time. It's that you're not aware a lot of the time of some of the smaller games because they just can't afford to rise above the noise, right? So all these things together just makes the final ticket really expensive.
It's interesting. I obviously know of the technology. I know of prototyping and how long that stuff takes. I didn't put it in the thing because it's totally something you'd expect a mouthpiece to say or whatever, but Sutherland from EA was talking in some interview, I think on Games Industry, about how EA Motive's game that Jade Raymond's working on has a mechanic no one's ever seen before in video games. And it's like, that's kind of a buzzword, but it's also kind of like, oh, well, there you go. And he says in the article, like, expect the game like fiscal 2021.
Right.
And they've been working on that forever at Motive.
Yeah, exactly.
I digress. I never thought about the idea of, from your guys' perspective, developers, talent drain, and people growing up and then having nowhere to go, right? I mean, that's what we always talked about at like IGN, there being a problem of like, well, I can only go so far at the company, right? And why I hear it kind of funny when we do an ad deal or go do this and somebody wants to be like, why they're just in it for the money. And it's like, no, I'm in it to make money so that I can pay Joey one day more and I can pay Andy one day more because I don't ever want to fucking lose them. Right. And if I keep them at the salaries they're at now, they have to look for that next thing. Exactly. I want to grow with them. I don't want to run into the place that, cool,
yeah,
this is where it is and you got to go.
Yeah.
I'll bring in somebody else who's 21 and it can live less and, I'm jumping ahead for their lives, but married and having kids or wanting a house or trying to live in the Bay Area.
Yeah, the time will come, you know, or just that they'll want to be able to have a car that, is brand new.
Just take care of people. Just take care of people, right?
Yes, exactly.
Reward them for the fucking hard work they do.
Yep.
I digress. I want to toss this one in there. It'll be simple. It's only directed at me, so you can just drink your water. Don't worry about it. Anton writes in, kindoffunny.com/KFGD, and says, hello, Greg and Tim. Love you guys. Sorry, I moved Tim out at the last second. I was a little put off last week when Greg was speaking about the Kind of Funny crew being scabs during the voice actor strike. I have been a member for 18 years, IBEW. I assume many members in the Kind of Funny community, as well as possibly Greg's dad, all being in unions, it made me question why this was okay that you guys are scabs. I assume you have tons of VO friends that were on strike. Are they okay knowing that you possibly hurt their cause in trying to get better work conditions and fairer pay? If no one crossed picket lines by accepting scab work, wouldn't these companies have to come to the negotiating table sooner? Am I way off in my thinking? Are the unions of VO versus traditional unions like teaching or utilities just completely different and not really comparable? It just struck a weird nerve in me, and I'm deeply sorry if I was way off base. Love and support as always, Anton in Chicago. Fuck, I wonder if you ever worked with my dad, Anton. It's a little column A, a little column B. And again, I'm speaking from my own perspective. I don't know. From literally growing up with my dad as a construction union guy, yeah, we would drive by job sites and yell at people that were working, like non-union. The voice actor union is a weird thing because they don't have, and I don't mean this in a bad way, they don't have a monopoly on voice acting, right?
Right.
For me, it's the fact that for Lego to approach me and say, hey, do you want to be in Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 is an awesome honor and great, but keep in mind I was already in Lego Marvel Avengers and I wasn't union there either.
Right.
So I don't think, this isn't like, a better example, and I'm not trying to throw, like, cast stones, right, is Life is Strange, where Ashley Birch couldn't be the voice actor for Chloe because she was on strike. So they hired a different actor to be Chloe. Me, Nick, Tim, and Kevin having the minimal amount of dialogue we had, maybe I'm wrong, maybe not, I think would have happened even if the voice actor strike wasn't going on. I threw in the scab line and joked around about it because I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But I think it would have happened regardless. And so it's this weird thing that my voice actor friends from the beginning of this have been split on this, where some people are like, no, this totally needed to happen. We needed the strike. We need this. And other people are like, this is crazy. I don't know why we're doing this.
Right.
So it's this weird thing for me where there wasn't there was the public message, obviously, but there wasn't like, hey, this is wrong, this is great, don't do that, don't do this. And I never saw anybody, you know, coming at the Life is Strange people or this. And for the most part, I would think, you don't, for the most part, do you know if your voice actors are SAG? Like, when I got clued in for a game I won't talk about, well, because I don't know the facts. The first time somebody clued me in of like, hey, when you watch the credits of this game, watch how people are credited. Because that tells you if they're SAG or not based on what's... And I was like, oh, really? I never fucking thought that through. I never...
Yeah.
It's just not something we think about. And I don't know how much the voice actors think about. And I also think that there is not a fucking reality out there. There's not even an alternate reality where they're like, well, fuck, Troy Baker is striking. Let's get Craig Miller. That's not like what... Like, we're not voice right. actors. We're just shitty side characters who pop up. And like, we are kind of funny and it's great.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a super complicated... conversation there, because first and foremost, our industry isn't a unionized industry.
Yeah.
So that puts voice actors at a disadvantage when it comes to video game productions.
Sure.
Because no one's union. And, you know, I've dealt with a lot of games. We made Pain.
I remember Pain.
And we had, you know, all, you know, known actors. Got to work with The Hoff and Mr. T. So, you know, that was a union production for us, because we were going with known talent that they wouldn't work otherwise,
sure.
unless it was a union production. And so, and we were fine with that, because they were the ones that we wanted. Now, you know, they, without getting into too much detail, like, part of the negotiation that went back and forth was an educational process of helping them and their representation understand too that, unlike in a movie, for a video game, a voice actor, no one's going and buying the Lego specifically because title because you're in it. No offense.
No, right? Not taken.
But that's and that's true for I don't care who it is that's doing voice in our industry, and that doesn't take away from their talent. It's that we also have entire engineering teams, design teams, and artists out there that are making the game a reality, and it's their work that is the cause for the purchase.
Right.
Right. So it's tough for them. So that just creates a scenario where it's, I think, tough for them, for the union, to be able to come in and make certain demands and saying, hey, you know, every production needs to be a union production, this, that, and the other. It's never gonna happen. Even in the movie industry, right, there's still non-union productions.
Right.
They're few and far between, but they happen.
Yeah.
And so I think – I don't know that I would consider you guys' presence in a game ever crossing a picket line. To your point.
I agree.
They didn't create the character and then do a casting call and pick you over union voice actor. They said, hey, we want Greg back in.
And so, yeah, so Anton – it's different. It's like – are the unions of VO versus traditional unions just completely different? I think it's what you're saying. The space is different.
Yeah, and I totally understand where they're coming
100%,
from.
Yeah.
And Godspeed, they should get what they deserve.
They did, yeah. Well, they came to terms. I mean, it's over, so they got it. So good on them. But yeah, it's a complicated, weird situation that isn't as black and white as when I was a kid, and it was like, Dad's like, that's not a union thing.
Right.
You're like, oh, fuck, you know what I mean? Or like the restaurant in town by my house, like, you know, when they opened, they were built, I guess, by non-union. People had like the fucking Grim Reaper out there and picket lines. You're like, oh, shit, this is like a real thing.
Yep.
Time to squad up. This is where one of you writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Give me your name, your username, your platform of choice, and why you need help in video games. I read it here. The best friends find you. Everyone plays games together and is an awesome community. Today, John needs help on Steam and Battle.net. On Steam, he's the Butted Knight. KNIGHD. On Battle.net, he's Butted Knight. Hashtag. God, that's where we're at in my life. Sorry. 1139. The Butted Knight says, I'm not toxic. I love making friends and talking video games. Please add me so I'm not playing alone. Thanks, the Butted Knight. Everyone add the Butted Knight or Butted Knight hashtag 1139. Christian, I got a new segment for you.
All right.
Kind of Funny Games Daily has grown exponentially and is amazing. We have great conversations and great news stories. However, sometimes there's great writing I run into on the internet that is games related, but I don't think news. Like, it's not, it's not, it shouldn't be in the Roper report, but then where do I put it in the show? Sometimes you mention them. Today, these two didn't get mentioned. I wanted to give a shout out for things you need to go read when you have time today. Over at usgamer.net, there's an article called Exclusive: How a Culture of Crunch Brought Telltale from Critical Darling to Layoffs. It talks a lot about what I've always said I think was the problem. They got too successful too fast, ramped up too fast, but it's got a whole bunch of quotes in there about what was happening, all anonymous. Talking to people who have left the company or are still at the company about everything that happened there. It's interesting. It's not damning in any respect. It's literally like, yep, got too big and our engine sucked and this is where it is.
But scaling is a rough, rough thing to manage.
100%. And then over on Kotaku, the one and only Jason Schreier doing some journalism has the curious case of the EA game dev who said he received death threats. I was on the road all yesterday. I'm not sure if this came up in all the Battlefront conversation yesterday. It might have, probably did. But the fact that there was a game dev who was like, oh, I got all these death threats in EA. And like Schreier started looking into it and he does not think this guy worked at EA. And it was that this guy was getting cited in like the CNN article on this and CNBC and other gaming outlets as well. But like since Jason started poking around, he's like scrubbed the EA thing from his thing. And he's like, oh, and it's like, interesting. Yeah. Oh, fascinating little read for you.
So allegedly, death threats.
I see what you did there. I like the wink too. You got that Nick wink down and everything. Time for You're Wrong. This is where people watching live go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tell us what we screwed up as we screwed it up. It's usually Capitalist Pig, who once again starts here with some of the clarification I asked for. Capitalist Pig says, Marvel Heroes officially launched on June 4th, 2013. Early access for those who pre-purchased was on May 29th, 2013. The PlayStation 4 Xbox version launched April 5th, 2017. Over its life, it's gone under many names, such as Marvel Heroes 2015, 16, and Omega. Exactly. Omega being the console version. That then. He corrects you. Killstrain launched in July 2016, not August. Quote, we are pleased to announce Killstrain will be available. He's quoting the PlayStation blog. Shut down July 1st, 2017. Now, I just want to, he says, Capitalist Pig is saying DC Universe Online is already shutting down some of its stuff. Right, PlayStation 3 is being there, but that's not, don't worry about it. PlayStation 4 is still going strong, I'm sure.
For DCUO?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but just talking about Sunset anywhere. PlayStation 4. Or 3, sorry. PlayStation 3. Oh, okay. Kebabs writes in, he has two, or she has two. Oh, on Battlefront 2, unlock for Aiden and the mission rewards being decreased. This only applies to single-player missions, not multiplayer. This is because you're meant to unlock Aiden, the story protagonist, for use in multiplayer after finishing the story. Dropping her unlock price meant adjusting the reward of the single player as well. Otherwise, the player would unlock her a quarter into the campaign.
Right. So my point there was, that's an awesome, very clinical explanation.
Yeah.
But you don't give awesome clinical explanations and then hope that the community is going to go, yay.
Right.
They don't give a fuck. They're already mad. They assumed that you did some math the first time. Now you just did more math. Their problem is they don't like your math.
Gotcha. Number two, Kebab says he's editorializing a bit. GameStop employees speculate the PowerPass program is being pulled because the program is too taxing on the outdated store computers. That's an IGN link there they're going to. Capitalist Pig is saying that the 4,600-hour number to unlock all the Star Wars stuff was before the changes to the heroes. He's still trying to find somebody recalculating it. EA won Worst Company in 2012 and 2013. Granny 117 says, Jim Sterling wasn't saying that games cost more to make. He was going against the notion that video game prices haven't changed. Oh, my apologies. I totally misread this then. His point was that all big games now have a base game and then typically also have a silver edition and gold edition options that cost upwards of $100. Major games also have product tie-ins like COD with Mountain Dew or something. Then there are season pass. So saying that dev pubs need saying that devs slash pubs need another revenue stream because games are still $60 isn't true. I see what he's saying. So he's saying since the argument that since prices of games have never increased, then that's why they would have to do gold edition, all this different stuff, and DLC and all that shit. And he's saying that's not true.
I don't know. We can agree to disagree.
Okay. Well, you can read.
I don't know that I want to take on someone named Capitalist Pig. So
no, Capitalist Pig's a good dude.
I'm scared of him is all.
Oh, I understand that.
Respect.
Go watch the gym video. I was getting it quoted to me from what I was reading today.
Yeah.
Titan Matrix says Christian said that no one was buying Lego Marvel for Greg's voice work. That is why I bought Lego Marvel Avengers. Ah, while I ended up buying this.
You know what?
Hell
Thank you for correcting me. I like being wrong.
Beta says that you're not wrong. It's not a you're wrong, but you forgot to add that Xbox Live launched 15 years ago today. True. Congratulations. Not really something we do, but don't worry about that. Capitalist Pig says SAG-AFTRA doesn't have closed shop agreements where a studio must only hire union actors. They do, however, generally require studios to give preference to union members when hiring. Interesting.
Well, where it really comes into play is the second you have one union actor, then the rest of it needs to be a union show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You can't split. You can't hire non-union and union actors for the same production.
Okay. How did I get... Whatever.
There probably wasn't...
like a Marvel Avengers they had.
Did they have AFTRA folks?
I don't fucking remember. Who knows?
Probably not.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, the 15th of November. Tomorrow, I'll be joined by Achievement Hunters Jack Patillo for the show. Remember, if you're watching this, thank you. You can get it on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygameslive, later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygameslive, and then podcast services around the globe, no matter where you get it. Thank you for watching the show. We love and appreciate you and your time that you give us. It's great. If you want to, consider going to Patreon. If you want to, consider supporting Christian. Thank you for coming by.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Follow him on Twitter. It'll be in the description below. Anywhere else we need to direct people?
No, not for now. Just, you know, I'm still trying to keep my head down a little bit.
Keep working.
Yeah.
And come up with something later.
Until I've got something sexy to share.
All right. Well, when you do, come back, all right?
You know it.
All right. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's been our pleasure to serve you.